We want to invite your attention this morning to the book of Exodus, chapter 5. Exodus, chapter 5, and verse 16. One verse out of this portion of the Word of God. And our subject this morning is shifting the blame. I hope you'll see what that's all about as we move into the message. Now here in Exodus 5, we find the children of Israel having been under bondage for over 300 years, and they are in a case here where they've asked Pharaoh to go out into the wilderness to worship God, and Pharaoh's got all mad and tore up about it and everything. And in spite, he decides he's just going to work them harder, because he figures out in his own human brain that they wouldn't be thinking about doing anything like recreation, as he views it, of going out in the wilderness and worshiping their God if they were more busy than they had been. So he wants to make sure they stay too busy to think about this stuff. And that's what we find here in the fifth chapter. He begins to demand the production of more brick for the building project he's got. And he does some real snarky things to cut back on the production, and at the same time demanding more production. So he's got them in a real bind here in Exodus chapter 5. And the taskmasters that supervise them are all angry because they're getting chewed out and abused by, you know, the governor and perhaps Pharaoh's lackeys. And they're really putting the pressure on the children of Israel. And here in verse 16 of Exodus chapter 5, the officers of the children of Israel begin to complain to Pharaoh and asking him why he was mistreating them the way he was mistreating them, and why he was asking them to produce more brick while at the same time he was making them go get their own, the children of Israel, go and get their own straw to put the brick together with. They made them out of clay and so forth, and they had to have some straw to mix with it to make those brick hard and make them real durable. And so the officers were complaining to Pharaoh. And in verse 16, we find a verse that to me almost stands as the epitome of what I call shifting the blame. They say to Pharaoh in verse 16, "There's no straw given unto thy servants, and they say to us, make brick, and behold, thy servants are beaten. But the fault is in thine own people." Now, to begin this message, I want to clearly define what is meant by shifting the blame. And the first thing I want to do is use some illustrations to demonstrate it, and then give you a plain country boy definition of it. We find that there are some really great illustrations to help us understand what shifting the blame is by looking at certain things in our own culture. For instance, if you think about your own life, how many of you have ever heard that famous old line that was popularized by Flip Wilson back several years ago in a movie where he played Geraldine Jones? And in that movie, he had a line that went something like this: "The devil made me do it." Well, if you remember that line, you'll be thinking about a line that he said that's been used a lot of times in American culture since then, that is to me the perfect example of shifting the blame. "The devil made me do it." And so that line stands as a great example. It personifies shifting the blame. And then when we look around our American lifestyle at things that go on in our own lives in general, we see acts of shifting the blame all around. Like here lately, we've gone through a housing bust, and a lot of people have lost their homes. And in almost every case where the people lost their homes to foreclosure, it was because they borrowed more money than they could possibly pay back, and they borrowed such a large amount of money that they couldn't even make the payments on it if things fell apart just a little bit. And sure enough, when things fell apart in the financial crisis that's hit us, those people didn't have the money to make their payments. They lost their home. The banks foreclosed on them. And those people very often today blame the banks and whatever other things for having lost their home to foreclosure. When in fact, if you and I are responsible about things we do, we will look at the rules by which we play the financial game, and we will say, okay, a house payment's never, the rules of finance tell us, they warn us, that a house payment is never supposed to be more than this percentage of your total income. And look here, I'm going to be given a loan on a house in which the payments are twice that percentage for me a month. That doesn't make sense. Maybe I'd better not take out this loan, even though the loan people say I can get this loan. That's what we would do if we were thinking straight. But in the big housing bubble, everybody thought, hey, I can get the money for a big house. And so they buy the house. A few years later, when things collapse, they lose their house. But they blame the banks. Well, folks, trust me, there's partial blame, if not full blame, to those who went through that awful thing. And I don't think it's a very small thing for people to lose their homes, but I'm just pointing out how Americans recently have set a bunch of examples of shifting the blame. And you know, a lot of times we see people involved in little fender benders along on the roads. And how many of those times when people get in fender benders, do they have, even us, have a tendency to blame the other guy for the wreck, even if we, in our heart of hearts, know that we were either at least in part to blame or altogether in blame for it. And we want to say, well, it was really his fault. He shouldn't have been doing so-and-so. And that's one of those shifting the blame tactics that we as Americans are tempted to use. And you know, a lot of times, if you'll watch some of these small serial shows on TV, where it's comedy or something like that, you'll find comedy shows a lot of times where a whole show is caught up with people blaming somebody else for something they did when that somebody really didn't do it. And so they make a big comedy skit out of the whole thing. That's a great illustration of shifting the blame. And all these social and cultural illustrations we live in and that go on around us are great examples of shifting the blame. Now, essentially what I mean by shifting the blame is this, is when a person is responsible for something, like when you or I are responsible for something, but we don't want to be identified as the responsible party, so we may be tempted to point to somebody else or something else that caused it to happen. That's shifting the blame. If we do something and we know we're to blame, but we don't really want to have ourselves pointed at as the guilty party, this temptation will rise up in our heads to say, well, it wouldn't have happened if so-and-so hadn't happened. And we begin to try to move the blame off to somewhere else or somebody else. That's a tendency all human beings have. Now, the text verse that we're using, I think, gives us some insight into a case where the Egyptian taskmasters were demanding from the Israelites that they make more brick, and they themselves set up the scenario, the Egyptians did, where they couldn't possibly meet their quota. And then they ended up blaming the Israelites for not making the brick, when in fact, they were just shifting the blame. The Pharaoh and his lackeys had caused the shortfall, and yet they said, you Israelites are to blame. That's shifting the blame. Great example of it here. That's why I believe the Lord led me to choose this text as our text verse in the message. Now, we sometimes see in all eras of history that small-minded rulers and small-minded public servants that are put into positions of leadership have a tendency a lot to blame somebody else for what's happening that they have caused. And in fact, America today is a firsthand example of exactly that kind of situation where leaders of our country are saying, no, it's not my fault, it's their fault. And they're pointing to everything else in the world except themselves, when in fact, they are to blame. That's shifting the blame. Now, the first thing I noticed when I began to develop this message was that Scripture was really sparse in any accounts of somebody who was definitely identified as a true believer being involved in shifting the blame. There's just not very many instances, examples of it in the Bible. The one clear and classical account that I found involved Adam in the Garden of Eden. And I think God put that in there for a great reason. I don't believe that every other believer living in the Bible age was totally free of shifting the blame. I don't believe every believer that's written about in the Bible escaped from being guilty of shifting the blame. But in fact, I think that God left it sparse for a reason. I don't believe that God wants a bunch of examples of children of God shifting the blame, because I believe it's a very bad habit pattern to get in, and I believe it's something we as God's people should avoid. We have an opportunity to look at some others in our message this morning that shifted the blame, and some of those are going to be who we believe to be saved people, but there's not very many instances of that. Now, if we're honest with ourselves, we have to admit that we do the very same thing that our Bible characters we're going to look at this morning are guilty of doing. So it certainly should raise the question in our minds about why there are so few examples of believers in the Bible where the Lord revealed that they shifted the blame to somebody or something else in order to avoid looking guilty. And again, I say, I believe that's because God doesn't want to manifest a whole bunch of believers shifting the blame, because it's a real bad practice for believers to get into. So what am I saying about shifting the blame? I believe that believers ought to assume responsibility for their own deeds and avoid shifting the blame always and every time. I believe that includes every one of us here this morning and every true believer on the face of the planet. Let's look at what we do and how we do it, and let's make sure that we're not making excuses for who we are, or what we do, and make sure that we don't shift the blame and say, well, it wouldn't be that way if so-and-so didn't happen. Let's look at how we take responsibility and make sure that we are, as God's people, do take responsibility for the things that go on in our lives. Now, as I said, we want to look at some Bible examples of people shifting the blame, and I want to draw some spiritual lessons from what we read here, and I'm trusting God the Spirit, Holy Spirit, will help us to kind of take these lessons home to ourselves about shifting the blame. For our first one that I've already mentioned, let's go to the book of Genesis chapter 3 and read verse 12. Genesis chapter 3 verse 12. Now every one of us probably know this verse by heart or pretty close to it. This is where God comes to Adam and Eve and asks the question, didn't I command you that you shouldn't eat of the tree thereof knowledge of good and evil? And in verse 12, the man said, that was Adam, the woman whom thou gavest to me to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. Now here, Adam is simply shifting the blame, because, in fact, he stands as the premier shifter of blame, because he was the federal head of mankind, and he was the head of the household made up of, at this point in time, of Adam and Eve. And the head was supposed to be leading the household, and he didn't. He listened to Eve instead of saying, get away from that tree and get away from that serpent. We're going somewhere else. Instead of doing that, he stood there and listened to Eve, and he ate of the fruit as she had. So Adam shifted the blame. Now, as he shifts the blame, notice that he's blaming his closest associate course, this time he's the only one he had, but still, his closest associate. He was blaming his wife. Now, does that sound familiar, folks? Does it sound familiar in our lives how we have this tendency, and I'm not saying we do it, but that we have this tendency to blame the spouse when something goes wrong in the household. We say, well, you know, if so-and-so hadn't done it, then so-and-so. We want to blame those closely associated to us. Maybe we want to blame the kids. Maybe we want to blame the wife or the husband. Maybe we want to blame the uncle or the cousin or whoever. Somebody who's a close associate. That's exactly what Adam did. Now, without intending to do so, I think we're all tempted to shift, and I'm going to say this a bunch of times during this message, we're all tempted to shift the blame for our own missteps to our closest associates. And it's common. It's very human. Just like Adam did it. Now, why is that? Why is it that we seem most tempted to shift the blame to our closest associates? Well, as you can think about it, you realize that you're rubbing shoulders with your close associates most of the time. And so they're in the same environment that you are. And so they become easy patches for shifting the blame, because if they're in the same room where something happens, then it's very easy to shift the blame. You can't... My wife and I have a joke. We used to have a couple of neighbors lived across the road from us. And our kids were always trying to shift the blame, being children of Adam as they were, from themselves to the brother or the sister. And we had the neighbors who lived across the road, and Diane and I used to, when we would begin to instruct our kids about shifting the blame, and they'd say, well, he did it, talking about the brother, or she did it, talking about the sister. And we'd say, no, it wasn't y'all. Leroy and Myrtle did it. That was our neighbors across the road. And we started using that phrase all down through our married life. Even today, we still say that. We'll shift the blame, or as a joke, we'll say the neighbor did it, you know, when we talk to one another about something that happened in the house. And so that's the tendency that we have. Whoever is the closest associate, we tend to be tempted to blame them. And in fact, when we are tempted to do that, if we follow that course, we end up excusing ourselves, even if we are really to blame, folks. So we got to watch that snare. We got to watch shifting the blame, and especially shifting it to the easiest ones. I'm not saying shift it to anybody, but there's just a bigger temptation to shift it to those closest associates we have. And the reason is not only because we live in proximity with them and rub shoulders with them, are in the same environment with them, but because the closer that people are to us, the easier it becomes to find fault with them. Have you ever heard the phrase, familiarity breeds contempt? That, you know, that human adage grew out of human associations. It's not something somebody just invented somewhere and it caught on. It caught on because it's true. The familiarity does have a tendency to tempt us to get contempt for those we become most familiar with. And you know what? As humans, there are a lot of things in old Bob Myers' life that would tend to breed contempt in people that he meets and people that are around him a lot. So the temptation is there, and the fodder, the material to make it happen in the lives of that person that you might feel contempt for is there also. And folks, trust me, God's people are in a big limelight. They're under the large spotlight from the world. And they, whether they are closely inspected by the world or not, I want to tell you something. The devil will make sure that everything in your life is put under a magnifying glass so that everybody around you can see how you are or are not living for the Lord. And if you don't look anything like a Christian, if you don't act anything like a Christian, if your household affairs don't look anything like a Christian would have them, If your household itself doesn't look anything like a Christian would have it, I'm going to tell you something. The devil will focus a telescope on it, and pretty soon the blame for how you do things will come home to roost on each one of us about how we are or what we have or what we do, because the devil makes sure it's so. And that's why we're called to a special kind of living for the Lord. But here Adam shifts the blame to the woman because she's in close proximity, and it's easy to find fault with those living next to us. You see it again and again amongst kids in a household. Now, a bunch of kids are in a household, and how many times have you heard your child, your children, or your grandchildren blame the other, another grandchild, when you know in your heart, or maybe you actually saw it, that they were to blame for something that happened? They'll turn right around and blame one of their siblings. I've seen it. You've all seen it. That's the human nature coming out in those kids. I've watched dogs and coyotes and packs operate and react amongst themselves. And dogs are especially famous for this. Back when I was a teenager, there's a bunch of dogs in the community where I live. And invariably, a bunch of dogs would get in a pack together out there along the roadside or somewhere. And pretty soon, the big dog and the next big dog would get in a fight. And they just whoop up on each other, just beat up and gnaw and snarl and growl and bite and rip. And pretty soon, the fight would break up. The big dog would overpower the next biggest dog, and they'd have to stop fighting because the next biggest dog would back off and quit trying to assume dominance there. And as soon as that happened, that next biggest dog, who got whipped up on a little bit, would be walking around in the pack all stiff and offended because he was hurt, because he was beat. And the first other dog that he gets near, he'll jump on him and whip him. What is that? Shifting the blame. Even dogs know how to do it. That dog that got whipped up on and got driven out to the outside of the pack by the biggest dog in the pack was looking for somebody to blame for getting whipped. And the first dog that got near him, he blamed him and jumped on him and tried to whip him. That's the way it works, folks. That's the way it works in God's creature population where sin has entered in. And so we're guilty of it. We want to avoid it. Now, Adam, when you think about what he went through right there, he didn't feel comfortable about what he and Eve had just done. And Eve had, in fact, encouraged Adam to eat the fruit. She came and talked to him about it, did a persuasion thing on him. And so Adam was certainly in a bad situation, and when he had to face God with it, he certainly could not possibly have felt comfortable. But when we look at this event in its entirety, and we look at Adam's part in it and Eve's part in it, we have to realize that Adam was totally autonomous about what decision he would make about it. Nobody twisted his arm. Nobody forced him to blame Eve. Nobody forced him to eat the fruit. That was a choice that he made. And when God came to him, if sin had not already entered the camp and Adam had been honest, Adam would have said, "I did it. I take sole responsibility for my eating of the fruit." But he didn't. "The woman that you gave me, she gave to me, and I did, and then I ate it." It's like, if you're going to blame somebody, blame her. And that's the classic example of shifting the blame. And it's one of the great curses that we as God's people ought to avoid like the plague. Avoid shifting the blame. Take responsibility. That's a great lesson from Adam. Folks, let's realize that we always have options in our lives. Always have options. And one of those options is to take responsibility for our own actions. When somebody in our lives seems to be pushing us in a direction of choosing the wrong option, if we choose that wrong option, It's our fault, not our friend's fault, not our wife's fault, not our husband's fault. It's our fault if we choose the wrong option. So let's not act out, Adam. Let's admit that we're the responsible party, and then we can move on from there. Now, when it came time to take responsibility then, Adam shifted the blame. And by this, he set a precedent and the habit pattern for all of mankind from that day forward about shifting the blame. So let's learn something else from Adam about this. It is our most natural reaction in time of guilt to look for somebody besides ourselves to blame. Let's take that home to ourselves from Daddy Adam and remember that we got that tendency from old Adam, but we don't have to practice the tendency. We can take responsibility for ourselves, about our own behavior for ourselves, and by that we will be owning up to the real responsibility that is ours and ours alone. That's the option to choose. Now, we ought to be able to see that Adam probably shifted the blame because he was driven by shame. And that shame then became a snare to him. He failed God. That's what he did. That's what sin is all about. It's failing God. And he failed people by not taking that leadership role as the head of the family. He failed people. He failed Eve. And so let's remember that even failing people, much less failing God, is a strong force that tempts us to follow this weakness of shifting the blame. I think some of the strongest people in the world are those that say, I'm responsible. You might, in your Adamic spirit and mine, we don't really see it that way. We don't. We look for an out, an escape route. But the truth is, folks, when you look at character of people, some of the strongest people in the world are those that take responsibility for their own actions, and they'll do it publicly, they'll make the statement publicly, they'll admit when they're wrong. And folks, the reason that I say they're strong people is because admitting wrong is part of character building. Now, let's close this look at Adam shifting the blame by saying that his act gained not one single thing one way or another. Not a single advantage to him or his wife was gained by him shifting the blame. And that's exactly the way shifting the blame will occur, what the end result of it will be for us in our lives. Shifting the blame will gain nothing for us. In fact, it will lose us a great deal. We're going to try to cover one more point, and that is this. Let's go to Genesis chapter 4 and verse 9 and look at another type of shifting the blame. And let's cover this before we run out of time. Genesis 4 and verse 9. Here we have the account of Cain and Abel. We're all familiar with the story. We all know that Cain caught his brother out in the field and he killed him. Cain already knew he was doing a bad thing because he didn't kill him right in the house in the presence of his mom and daddy. Have you ever thought about that? Why did he wait? He caught him out there, out in the field, away from everybody. Because Cain already knew that it was wrong. Without being told, thou shalt not kill, Cain inherently, as a creature of God, already knew. So there he was out in the field, and in verse 9, we find that the Lord came to Cain, and he said unto him, where is Abel thy brother? God already knew. I got a funny feeling Cain knew that God knew. But it didn't matter. Cain was who he was, and so his answer came out of what Cain was. And we find that he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? Now, we could start this examination by saying that Cain began the shifting of the blame that he shows forth here by telling a flat lie. And I do want to point that out, but I don't want to dwell on that. But it was. He started the whole thing out with a lie. Let me ask y'all something. I don't want you to remember this. I don't want you to remember things of the past and dwell on them and be all sad about it. But go back just a little bit to either yourself or somebody that you know that shifted the blame and see how many times that shifting of the blame happened, that it began with a lie. You'd be surprised how many times shifting the blame begins with lying. I didn't do it. And you see this manifest itself a lot among children. As soon as you say, "Who did that?" The person that didn't do it, a lot of times the kid will say, "I didn't do it." And then everybody else around the room, "I didn't do it either." That's the way it is with the children of Adam. And so a lie very often goes before the shifting of blame. Now, we want to look at Cain's shifting of the blame. And if your brain's moving here and you're thinking about this, you'll see the shifting of the blame in his next remark. "I know not. Am I my brother's keeper?" he says. There's your shift. Now, the first and most preposterous thing that we see about this shift of Cain is that it is a direct challenge to God. Now, I don't know if we intentionally challenge God with our shifting of the blame very often, but Cain did. Cain challenged God. "Am I my brother's keeper?" It was like, "What are you coming to me for? I'm not supposed to be taking care of this guy." That's what Cain was doing here. He was shifting the blame, but at the same time he was challenging God with the question. And I find that when you get right down to the root of shifting the blame and answers that we give and excuses that we make, very often we are, without knowing it, challenging God. Because when we say, "Well, it's not my fault," or something like that, we're saying, "Find somebody else to blame." And if we say that, we're saying it to God. Especially if we're to blame. And we're trying to shift it off, we're saying, "You made a mistake here, God. Find somebody else to blame." Now, he's challenging God with this answer, and at the same time, he's challenging his responsibility to God or to anybody else. He's challenging God, even asking him the question, but notice it goes a little deeper than that, because he's saying, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And by saying that, he's saying, essentially, the opposite side of that coin is, "I'm not my brother's keeper." And so, he's challenging his responsibility, which he was responsible, by the way, folks. You and I are our brother's keeper, regardless of what Cain says or doesn't say about it. And certainly, in an earth that had that housed four people, Cain was obviously and most certainly Abel's keeper, as Abel was his. And so, this shifting of the blame is actually an act of denying that we have any responsibility. That's what Cain shows us here. Now, this shift of the blame doesn't name or point to any particular person that the blame ought to be shifted to. Do you notice that? "Am I my brother's keeper?" It doesn't say, "Well, so-and-so, daddy's supposed to be taking care of him. Mama was supposed to have been watching him." It doesn't say that. He doesn't actually target somebody. And that's the kind of shifting of the blame, as flaky as it is, folks, it's often used. Because it keeps you safe. People are kept safe if they shift the blame without targeting a party. That's the way Cain did it Well, wasn't he already very sophisticated in the ways of sin? That he actually said to God, I'm not my brother's keeper. I'm not supposed to be watching him. But he didn't say, Daddy was supposed to have been watching him. He just left it hanging right there in the air. And we as children of Adam, we're tempted to the same kind of shield. In fact, that's the political shield that people can take without naming a target, and they can get by a lot easier with this Cain shift than they can some others, like Adam used when he said, well, it was my wife's fault. We can say, somebody out there in the ether did it, or was supposed to do it. I wasn't supposed to do it. Wasn't my responsibility. It's somebody else's out yonder. That's what Cain was doing. Now, so it doesn't name or point to a person, but it represents the human tendency to shrug off responsibility without actually naming somebody who should be responsible. And although we may not realize it, folks, this may be a very common type of shifting the blame. I'm going to give you an illustration that shows perfectly how our little children who have the genetics of Adam in them do it. This room full of kids are playing. And mama's in the next room. Or mom and dad in the next room. Anyway, an overseeing parent or adult is in the next room. And one of the kids knocks a lamp off the end table and it breaks all to pieces. And the parent jumps in the door and says, who did that? And around the room, everybody gets quiet and the kids will start saying, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. They don't say, he did it. Sometimes they do. But when it's one of those, I didn't do that games around the room, and nobody takes responsibility, but nobody points, that's a case of Cain shifting right there. And we see it all the time. What time it isn't, he did it. It's, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. As they go around the room. So this is the way it happens. They're shifting the blame off of themselves, but they're not going to have to worry about getting beat up by older brother who really knocked the lamp off the table, or not, they don't have to worry about getting something thrown at them by younger sister who was the one that knocked the lamp off the table. They just say, I didn't do it, and that clears them while it doesn't get them in trouble with the other sibling. That's the Cain shift. It happens all the time among the children of Adam. And we have to watch out for it. It's a great temptation. Oh, by the way, kids don't need to be let off with that shifting the blame. If you can determine who the guilty party is, you exact some kind of discipline on the guilty party, and you instruct others not to be shifting the blame. That's what we ought to do, because this is one of those hard things to break. It's as hard to break as what we call pure lying. It's hard to break among children. And so, here we have, at this point, two examples of biblical character shifting the blame. Now, we're out of time, so we're going to have to stop there.